lost information. Who's calling me?
My name is Michaela Jordan Murray from Catskill, New York, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
The world is changing, and we must change with it. The Thingularity Radio Show will begin emphasizing digital rights and protection in the coming age. Our new segment will be called Defense Against the Dark Arts. We will provide tips and strategies for cloaking your online and actual footprint. Find us on WGXE first Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. or find us on your schedule at wgxe.org.
WGXE underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, a nonprofit theater connecting the Hudson Valley through transformative cinematic experiences in both Rhinebeck and Saugerties. This month, playing Death of a Unicorn, The Friend, Sabbath Queen, Eric LaRue, Ex-Husbands, The Ballad of Wallace Island, Warfare, Legion 44, On Swift Horses, The Legend of Ochi, Hallelujah, and a lineup of special programming from Upstate Films Art House and Revival House series. Information at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Casey of Greenville, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hey, this is Rob Lumberg, host of Uncontaminated Sound, live for a second conversation with writer, director, and actress Kirsten Loyens. Kirsten, welcome to Uncontaminated Sound live. This is my second iteration going live with WGXC 90.7 in. So it's a different medium comparatively to Zoom and podcasting, of course. So welcome to my experiment.
But this feels a little bit, speaking of experiment, this feels a little bit like podcasting. It feels good.
Yeah, right? It was cool. It's cool because, like, since 2020, I kicked off some stuff, and it's been a cool journey. But first of all, besides myself, how are you? How are you doing today?
Thank you for asking. I'm good. It has honestly been kind of a crazy day. Woke up to the news that Pope Francis passed away, which was not great news. I'm going to be honest. Love that man. And yeah, went to the gym and trying to self-care and do all that good stuff. And I'm a mom of two, so getting them out the door with my husband and all that. I'm actually a mom of three, but my third doesn't live with us anymore. So yeah, you know, living life. And kind of the culmination of my life arrived today in the form of a book that I wrote. Literally came, it came on my doorstep today, like 10 minutes before we signed on.
That's crazy.
I'm not kidding. So it's like, I'm like every, if you see me looking, I'm just looking because I'm like, is this real? Like it's literally above me and like right here. So it feels very like, oh my gosh, is this like actually happening kind of a thing?
I'm still adjusting to like in studio. So apologies. I'm paying attention to a million things, audio wise, but, so yeah, let's dive into it though. I mean, like I'm curious on the show. I love not only just talking about projects, but also going into the journey of what led to the ultimate project and why you kept up with your creative craft. Because I know as a creator myself, as a photographer, visual artist and writer, and obviously conversationalist, it's a very difficult journey to continue onward, particularly when you face challenges in the creative realm, which
I mean, challenges could be one way to describe it.
Oh yes. No, I mean, come on. Well, it's kind of like self-torture, right? Why do you do it to yourself? Why do you keep on
honestly,
going, pursuing this intangible vision and dream you have, right? So I guess wrapping back to the dream, when did you, when were you first curious about or like really like, I want to pursue like acting? Go ahead.
I mean, yeah. So I talk about it in the book, but when I was in kindergarten, I was fully like, I'm going to be a teacher. And then we went and saw a production of Oliver that the fifth and sixth graders put on. And the boy who played Bill Sykes, you know, he had a stippled on beard. And I was like, oh, okay, this is new feelings I'm feeling. Like, why am I so, he was just so magnetizing. And I also was like, there's something happening on the stage. And I had always been very like, I was shy as a kid. And my mom said, I went into a gymnastics class, did a tour, like a forward roll, put my arms up like you do in gymnastics, and everybody clapped. And my mom said she watched from that moment, my eyes be like, whoa, this is different. And I still was shy with new people and stuff, but there was this element of like, almost like I could put up a guard when I was performing. And it was almost like I wasn't myself. So fast forward, I'm 6 years old, and I'm watching this production. And it was just, it was so like the light switch went on. And I was like, I want to be on that stage. And I want to be next to him, the boy in sixth grade, who was way too old for me. But he was my brother's friend. And he came over one afternoon to ask if my brother could play, and he couldn't. And I told him I loved his dying scene. And then he showed me like what a dying scene was. And I was hooked. And I was like, no, never mind. I'm not going to be a teacher. I'm going to be an actress. And there was other things that happened with that. You know, as I got older, I was bullied a lot. And there was a correlation between if I'm famous, I'm going to be safe. And nobody will say anything to the famous person, right? And so, which is hilarious. And so there was, I think 50% of it was, I loved being on stage. I loved telling stories. I loved performing. And 50% of it was like, I can feel really safe with doing this. And I'll show them and I'll prove to them. And so, you know, I was the quintessential theater kid. I did all the shows, and I used to write to Jodie Sweetin on Full House and tell her like, listen, I'll dye my hair blonde, like I'll be a cousin on the show. And I only ever got a postcard back. I'm still waiting to hear from her. And I kept asking my parents to get me an agent, and my dad had been in the industry and said, listen, no, like when you turn 18, you are more than welcome to go professional, but you cannot get paid until you're 18, which looking back was the biggest gift they could have given me, because I was so hungry for validation and like proving myself worth that I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea where I would be if they would have allowed me to do that. And so, you know, I went to school for theater and And then I, after my sophomore year, I was like, I'm about to accrue $60,000 in loans, or I could just move out to LA. And so when I was 21, I saved up not nearly enough money and I moved out to LA. And, you know, I had one friend out there who actually, he wrote the foreword to my book and I thought I was going to marry him. Spoiler alert, I didn't. And he is an actor and a model and he's on Grey's Anatomy now. And which I was on at first. So I just, I always tell him that, even though mine was only one episode.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't have to be in LA and to be an actress. There's certain things that have to, and I just didn't have those. If you're young, you have to look, have a certain look. Mm. You have to be, frankly, you have to be hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was constantly being told you're not pretty enough and all these things. And I didn't have any, really help at all. There was no Nepo for me. And so it took me 3 years to get my SAG card, which is Screen Actors Guild. It took me, I think, a year and a half or two to get my first manager. And everything was just like clawing. It was just really, really challenging. And I've worked so many jobs. I've been a waitress, a cocktail server, a nanny, worked in retail. I did marketing stunts on the street, swim lessons. I dressed a host for a TV show. I was her stylist. I have done so many different jobs. I never was able to pay my bills with acting, but I was also able to have some really incredible experiences that I can look back now and be like, my 12-year-old self would be so proud of me. I got really close to some really big things, but I just wasn't being offered anything that was close to what I could do. And it was, my friend who wrote the foreword, Chris, and a bunch of other friends, they were getting multiple auditions a week. And I was lucky if I got maybe one guest star a month, maybe two. There's a huge thing with actors. It's called pilot season. It doesn't fully exist anymore because there's so many streaming services. But, in the, let's say the 80s and 90s and early aughts, maybe even before then, it was this very defined season in the winter when you would audition for TV pilots. I mean, you think of everything, The Office and Friends and all these different things. And I, my whole time there, auditioned for two pilots and went to producers on one. And I have friends that have auditioned for hundreds, So just the doors were not even, forget closing in my face. The doors weren't even kind of opening. I'd have a guest star here, a co-star there on a TV show. But for the most part, it was just trying to be able to get in the rooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
For them to even say no, Here I am watching E! True Hollywood Stories and hearing about, this person had 1,000 auditions and I'm like, 1,000? I just want 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the worst is when they would be like, why have we never seen you before? And I'm like, 'cause you won't bring me in. And so that to me as a creative was more heartbreaking than even the rejection, than leading to can't even get in the room. And so I started to write and I started to create my own stuff. And I wrote a one woman show. And throughout the course of this, I had been in a really serious relationship. We got engaged and I was tying the bows on our wedding invitations 2 months before. And he came in to say, hey, I don't think I know what love is. I'm not sure I ever loved you. And then about 45 minutes later, I found out he had cheated on me.
Wow.
And then he proceeded to call the wedding on and off for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And
that's crazy. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what's even more insane is that I allowed him to treat me like that because of my lack of self-worth. And don't get it twisted. He owns he needs to own the responsibility, right? Yeah, it's not my responsibility but the fact that I continue to put myself in this position and, I wrote a one-woman show called Crushed, Why Is It That the Boys You Like Never Like You Back? And that was in 2012 and it was in Hollywood Fringe and it won Best of Hollywood Fringe and for solo show. And it was awesome. And this huge writer-director came and he was like, after years of being told, I don't know what to do with you and I don't know where I see you and you're just not the right look. And a lot of you're not pretty enough. That was what I got over and over. She's not pretty enough. You're not pretty enough. And there were other things said, but that was kind of the crux.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was like, I know exactly what to do with you. This is golden. I want to make this into a TV show. And I had had enough people be like, I know exactly. For some reason, this was just so different. We were meeting on the studio lot. He was having lunch brought in. It was so legitimate. He knew the show. He went through it piece by piece. He was like, I think we should do this. I think we, it was like, he cared so much. And it was finally like, I'm finally seen. I'm finally like, as an artist, like we don't do it to be seen, but there's an element to get anywhere. We have to be seen. Right. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately art is so others can see themselves. And creativity is the working out of our own stuff. And hopefully that ignites something in someone else. And it was so beautiful. And then it wasn't. And he fully ghosted me. He got a green light on a huge film. Mm-hmm. And he very sweetly had written me into a TV show he was doing. But he just, everything went away. All the promises, all the, you know, we're going to do this for ABC and all this stuff. And I didn't see it coming, which was so painful because it was kind of like the broken engagement all over again. And what I also didn't see coming was all the people that had connected with the show and how many people I had been able to do it in my hometown. And I had been able to do it a little bit of some other smaller towns. And how many people came up to me and they were like, I too asked out a boy 7 times and he said no. Or, you know, I too had a broken engagement. Or, and then it became not just about boys, it really became about life. Mm. My daughter didn't get into her dream school. Will you please talk to her? You know, my kid got fired from their job. I didn't get the dream thing. This boy didn't like me. This girl didn't like me. And it really became this like beautiful universality of like how many of us have had so many dreams that didn't work out the way we wanted them to, and how, and throughout the course of this, I had ghosted a guy that I thought was too nice, and we ended up falling back in step and falling in love and getting married and having a kid, and then bringing my little sister through Big Brothers Big Sisters into our family, and she became our other, she started calling us her other parents, and it was just, it was so much beauty that happened from getting crushed. Mm. But I, you know, I walked away from the entertainment industry. And then I remember a therapist saying to me, it sounds to me like you still really want to do this. And I was like, I do, but it just hurts. Like I left out one major thing. I put up Crushed two years after or 3 years after I put up Crushed again. Mm-hmm. I had been meeting with writers and I'd been meeting with agents and managers who had heard about Crushed and they were, and this, and I'd been sending out pilots that I had written and other things. And this one manager was like, I've heard about you. And I've heard about the show. When can I see it again?
Yeah.
So I put up the entire show again. And by this time I was solo parenting. My husband had taken a job hosting a TV show in Arizona, but needed to stay back. So I was solo parenting an 18-month-old and an 18-year-old. I did the show again after 3 years. And she bought 2 tickets. She got my PR package. It had like a slap bracelet because so much of it takes place in the 90s and it's so fun. She never came.
Oh, no. Wow.
And that was the moment that I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to my therapist saying that. And I was like, woman, like, I don't want to hear you. And I had continued to write. I was continuing to write. I was continuing to put myself out there and just, you know, I'd be like, this friend worked on this TV show. Can you send my thing over there? And I had so many friends that believed in me. And I think for them, it was like, I don't get it. Like, yeah. I am so good. Like, yeah. I'm so good.
Yeah.
And it was just, I think it was frustrating for the people around me too. Cause they're like, well, this doesn't make it works for us. Like the pipeline works for us. Why isn't it working for you? And I think I will never know why I have, but I feel very, very, very like grateful that it didn't, because through all of it, I was able to connect and reach young women. And I say young women, like 17 to 57.
Yeah. Yeah.
And boys too, without cooties. But I would say people that also feel like they're the only one, because in all of this creative heartbreak, romantic heartbreak, personal heartbreak, career heartbreak, when you feel like everyone else is getting their perfect mash, remember that game? It's the cover of my book and I talk a lot about it. when you feel like everybody's getting their dream this and their perfect this, and you feel like you're the only one, that to me is actually more isolating and more devastating than the heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2020, when the world was in a dumpster fire and we had to leave Brooklyn, we were living in Brooklyn at this time.
Okay.
We had lost work.
Yeah.
We had
yeah.
to leave. We couldn't pay our rent anymore. We had just adopted our son. And I had just gone back into the entertainment business. I had literally been on two auditions, one of them, and then the world blew up. And then we had to leave Brooklyn. Hmm. And then we had to stay with a family member because of what was happening with our son's adoption, and also because we didn't know what was happening with work for us. And I started Crush the Podcast, and my cousin and I started it, and it was great because she was in her, you know, early to mid 20s, and I was in my, at the time, I think I was in my 30s. And it was just an incredible way as a creative. Like you said, I love that you called yourself a conversationalist.
Yes, yeah.
I love that. Well, it's so good.
Well, I just find conversation, particularly with other creatives, and there's a lot I could touch base on throughout your journey and in your story, which you've been talking about so far up to now at this moment. And it's so... Yeah, I think, well, I've found myself too in this isolated bubble, like I should be here around my peers, should have the, like, I guess, corporate job, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm like, with my craft regarding photographic stuff and visual art, it's like, this is my journey. I couldn't do anything else. You know, once I found it, I couldn't do anything else. But wrapping back to your podcast, Crushed, it's the same kind of, I assume it was the same kind of dynamic of just wax, you know, connecting with other creatives and kind of talking through the process.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. It was all kinds of different women. And what was so, we had a woman that had booked her dream job, a comedy night, like a comedy show at night. I think it was for Comedy Central, but I can't remember. Pandemic killed it.
Yeah,
she literally, I think the day before studio had been to the studio, had done the whole thing, and then pandemic killed it.
Yeah.
So we had women that it was that. We had women, one girl that was like, I swear to you, I was going to marry this guy. He didn't know it, but she was like, but so it was everything from, I thought I was going to go here and I didn't, to one who lost her father in a bridge accident. Like, it was so many different stories. And to me, it was the beauty of, like, you're not alone and it's okay to grieve. I think that is something that my whole book and, like, who I am has really come out of, like, we have to stop with the shoulds, right? I should be here. I should be there. And we have to get more honest. Yeah, I talk about going into Al-Anon, which is Friends and Family of Alcoholics. And the best thing we can do is tell the truth on ourselves. It is so freeing to just say, I'm embarrassed. And I am. I set out to do something in high school. I got voted most likely to become famous. And, like, I set out to do something and I did a lot of it, but I didn't complete it. But what does that say about me? Mm. Does that mean that I am a loser? Or all these things that I was called growing up? Or does that actually mean something else? And if it does, I'm excited to explore that. And I think as a creative, when you see your peers, people that you either are very close with or people that just are the same, around the same age as you, getting things that you so deeply, like, want and have worked so hard for and you don't get it, the first step is saying, I didn't get it and I'm really sad. The next step is saying, but why? And I don't mean the why of, like, this didn't happen and that didn't happen. I'm like, okay, why am I here right now?
Hmm.
What's happening with me right now? And I will say that, like, if I had gotten everything I possibly could have wanted, I actually wouldn't be able to connect with the people that I've been able to connect with. And this is actually incredibly more rewarding and more, like, spirit-filled and peace-filled. Like, it's so much better. Doesn't mean I still don't, like, ugh. But it's been such a beautiful journey. And out of Crush the Podcast, I, you know, I always thought about writing a book and I thought I was going to write, you know, some memoir, like, tour de, you know, I mean, like, I had all the ideas. And really what changed is I joined TikTok because my cousin, who I kept bullying me, like kept manipulating me. She kept being like sending me videos and then like, you could do it funnier. You could do it better. So I started doing these comedy sketches because I write comedy and some of them blew up. And then I shared my broken engagement story. And actually, I was really embarrassed to share it because it was kind of, I was like, oh, this is really sappy. And I told it a million times. It was in the One Woman, it's how the One Woman show started. It wasn't that. It was, there was a level of vulnerability. I had never really maybe been that vulnerable. And it connected right away. And then it blew up and went viral. And people were like, is this book talk? Are you writing a book? I would read your book. And I'm like, it's just too much. Like, I have put myself out there time and time again. It's too much. So then, fast forward a year, almost a year, and I read an article that the CDC put out, and it said 60% of teenage girls are experiencing like persistent sadness and loneliness and depression. And then 30% have thought of harming themselves and 10% have actually tried. And that changed everything for me because so much of that is based on our lack of worth. And so much of that is based on the comparisons, especially think about our generation, right? Or like I can't even imagine being a teenager with social media. I can't even imagine being a teenager with the access that they have. And so I put a video up on TikTok and it was really vulnerable and I was like crying. And I just basically was like, look, I know right now it feels like it's not going to be okay, but it will be okay. That doesn't mean you're going to get everything you want, but it will be okay. And I was blotchy and I was tearing up and I was about to delete it. I felt really vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then literally a comment was like, you have no idea how much I needed this. And then another comment. And it wasn't just teenagers. It was a lot of girls that saw like the teenager within themselves. And that propelled crushed the show that I did in 2012 originally was an opportunity for me to be seen. And it was an opportunity for others to be seen. But then it became, no, this is fully about others to be seen.
Yeah.
And then I shared, so this was in 2023. And then I shared my broken engagement story, the same one. And it blew up even more. And people were like, will you write a book? And I was like, it's happening. Like, I don't even care what that means. I have to let people know that you're going to get crushed time and time again. But you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And surprises are going to happen and it's not going to be what you want. But, you know, just because it's not what we want doesn't mean it's actually not what we need. And the amount of like beauty that's come out of everything that's happened. And the first book agent, we had a meeting. She picked the date. It was 15 years to the day my ex called off or said he didn't love me.
Yeah. Wow.
She didn't see it. She's like, I don't know how to wrap my head around this book. So she passed. So it's not like, oh my gosh. And then I got an incredible agent and I love her with like, she's the best rep I've ever had. She sees me, she knows me, and she knows what she's doing. And this is the other thing that was great as a creative. She was new to being an agent. She'd been in publishing and I loved that about her because I was like, I know what it's like to be new. I know what it's like to be finding your footing and I know what it's like to be hungry and I like you.
Yeah.
And then, it went on a full round of submissions with publishers and basically it was all the same stuff of the entertainment industry. We like it. We don't know what to do with it. We just don't get it. You're great. And the best is so many people, I'm like, this book isn't for you. It's for your niece. It's for your daughter. It's for your wife. It's for your partner. Like, it's not for you.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of old white men. and then it went on a second round of submissions and a new press saw it and passed it to an editor in her 20s. And she messaged me, my agent right away and was like, I want to take a meeting. And she got it from the start. And I love her. Her name's Kate. And the whole process has been collaborative. I didn't get some massive deal. This is not what I wanted. And it's everything that this book needed and I needed. And I think my listeners needed because I got to fully be me in my voice. I got to be funny. I got to be authentic. I got to curse. Like I got to do everything. I got to, my higher power, speaking of 12 step, is God, but I got to share that, but I didn't like, you know, anybody can have any higher power, universe or nature or whatever. And I got to be me. And that after, you know, I moved to LA in 2022 and we're now, 23 years later. And I have never felt more like settled in who I am as a creative. And writing this book, it just flowed out of me. I mean, you know, a third of it was already written because a third of it is the one woman show.
Oh, not to interject. I'm sorry to cut you off. Do you mean 2002?
Yeah. What did I say?
2022.
Oh,
like, oh! Did you move back?
No. Sorry, 2000. No, I appreciate
not
that.
To interrupt, but I just want to clarify.
Yeah. 2002, I moved to LA.
Yes.
I mean, my first headshots were black and white.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I still love the black and white aesthetic. That's what I'm known for regarding my series. But of course, with headshots now, it's a different style and look. But I was gonna interject regarding like hindsight from when you first wrote Crushed, the one person performance to the actual memoir, how has it evolved? I it seems like definitely the book is for, well, you've realized that art is your craft isn't for yourself, it's for others. And that's what I've garnered through your conversation, or I guess telling of your journey. And so once you realize that, it's a weight off your shoulders. I believe once you're like, I'm not creating for myself but others. Like when you at points where one wants to give up in the creative process, it's you have that actualization, or hopefully one may or may not, but once you do, as clearly you have, that you're like, oh, I'm just going to create to put it out there and people really heal from it. And that's doing its job as a piece of work, you know? So I think, I was curious about the evolution from the initial thought processes of why you created Crushed, the performance, to now the memoir.
Yeah, I think I created Crushed. So I was on a plane. I saw Carrie Fisher's one-woman show. And I was like, I can do that. Not that I'm Carrie Fisher. Please don't get it twisted. I'm not saying I am. She's a genius. But I was like, I can do that. And then I read Mindy Kaling's memoir, and she was talking about putting up something for New York Fringe. And I was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
I wrote my monologue to get my scholarship for college. And although part of it was borrowed from Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul, they had these little like graphics, and I like took some of the stuff, but I wrote that, and I realized I've been writing this whole time, and I had written some sketches, and there were some things out there. And so when I first did it, yes, it was very much like, I need to be able to showcase what I can offer in a way that is not three lines on, you know, as three lines on whatever, I can't even think of a show I was on, but a CBS miniseries or whatever. It started as that. And I remember I did a solo show workshop with a woman, and I can't remember her name, but she used to work with Gary Marshall a ton. She's really funny. I want to say her name's Jane, but she was amazing. And she said, I want you, it's so good. She's like, you have to cut half of it. And she said, and I want you to drop us in the middle, right in the middle of when this happens. Yeah. You're telling me too much in the beginning.
Yeah.
And there's something that really opened me up at that point where I was like, Yeah, that's where I want to go. And she opened me up in a way that I feel like that was the beginning of me realizing this wasn't just about, hey, guys, I have this talent that I'd love to show you. But I had always worked with teens. I worked at a teen camp, and I was a big sister, three big brothers, big sisters. And I did this thing called Challenge Day, which is, they used to show it on MTV, where they'd go into these high schools and they'd basically get most popular kids, the kids that are struggling socially, and kind of bring them all together and do these amazing programs where, like, crossing the line, if you've ever felt this, or if you ever, to show these kids that they're really not that different.
Yeah.
And one of the things they did, it was such an amazing thing to volunteer with. One of the things they did is they put us with a group of kids and they talked. And the kids found out that I was in the entertainment industry and I had done some TV work. And I remember sitting around and them, some of the girls crying, because it was like Gossip Girl was on and some other shows. And they were like, I just don't see myself. I don't feel beautiful. I don't feel valued. And I started crying because I was like, I promise you, I'm trying to write things that you can feel good about yourself. that are funny and push buttons, but that you can walk away feeling like, hey, like, I'm awesome. And I think that lit a fire under me. Doing Crushed, that writer really helping me open up, just dropping in that moment and seeing, because I remember her saying, like, we've all been there.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, okay. And then doing it in LA and having people come up. So by the time I then did it in, I did it for like a benefit performance. It was really starting to take a life of its own. So then, you know, fast forward however many years, I think it was like 10 years to reading that CDC report. And so as I'm crafting this book, yes, a third of it basically is the one woman show. It's funny. It takes place in the 90s. It's heartfelt. It's all these things. But as I'm crafting it and I'm kind of doing part, it's in a three part, I'm doing part one and I'm doing part three. There's so much that's happening that is an acknowledgement of how much I've healed inner child wounds. Not that I've healed them, but like the process of therapy, of mental health work, of medicine, of healing inner child wounds, that I want people that are reading it, whether they're 57 or 17, that they can see themselves and know that like, it doesn't have to be like this. You don't have to carry this baggage from childhood. You don't have to carry it.
Yeah.
And my art can reflect the kind of peeling away of those layers and the telling the truth on myself, because I want others to have the freedom to tell the truth on themselves and do it in like a funny way. Like I mean, I cry in this, I laugh in this. It's authentically just a human being trying to figure out how to be a good human.
I think a lot of us are trying to figure that out now. Well, I'll just turn the lens on myself.
Please.
It's a similar process. I mean, I picked up from my hometown in Boston and moved to New York in late 2016 on a crazy whim without, you know, I was in technology prior. And then I found a lens in 2017, had my first show in Chelsea and started just documenting music and culture and got a lot of press. I'm like, oh, this is it. This is my medium, you know, but it, to continue that momentum. It's taken a lot of moments of introspective and dark moments of where I've had to shed that, you know, I was also, you know, kind of like bullied in school throughout, you know, as a younger child. So it's like you have that self-doubt and but also need to once I get that traction and like people accepting my work, or as I initially saw it as myself, or they're accepting me, I'm like, this, I want more of it, you know, but
yeah,
it's a therapeutic process, you know, and it sounds like, the whole creative process is so strange. But I guess that process is really has you to, you know, forces you to dive deep within that subconscious self and like forces you to kind of heal that inner wounded child or just let it go and then be okay with who you are now in the present, which I've been trying to work on myself is just, you know, that kind of meditative process of just trying to live in the now and not think in the past, you know? So it sounds like your journey has been, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I do want to say something to that. I don't want us to live in the past.
Yes.
But I want us, and this book is going back into the past to figure out how I allowed myself to be treated that way.
Yes.
Why I pushed so hard to be an actor. And I love performing. I did the audiobook last week. I recorded
it. Oh, cool. Cool.
It was the best week of my life. Like, in all honesty, because I got to act fully for 4 days.
Yeah.
And I miss it, you know? And I took a break from acting when the book went on submission because I said to my acting reps, I just need a break. I need to focus on this. And our youngest child is neurodivergent, and I needed to really focus on him as well and parenting him. And it is so important that we actually go into our past, not live there, but go into there and grieve. Because if we don't grieve, we have really no hope of healing.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think that there's so much of that in the book, and then it's fun. But it's also, I punch you in the gut a little bit, you know? And the biggest, The first person that ever read this full book, other than editors and publishers, was a friend of mine that I met on TikTok. She is in the media space. And the biggest thing she said to me that, like, to me, I'm like, the book has done its job if nobody else reads it. She used the book to get out of a toxic relationship.
Wow.
And wow. She's like, Kirsten, I used so many points in your book. She was like, I saw myself. Our stories are different, but I saw myself. And I used, you said, like, I used it. And that, to me, is my hope for all of this. And it goes back to, like, it doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to keep, you know, I used to say to my therapist, like, I'm throwing bricks in a book bag. And every time, it's just, like, more bricks and more bricks. And it's getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And it's, like, how do I walk into an audition room when I've got all this other stuff going, you know? And ultimately, like, I have to take those bricks out. But to do that, I have to actually, like, look at the brick and, like, deal with the brick. Because if not, it's just going to chill in that backpack, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny, this little thing I have, it fell. Part of it fell.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That just happens.
Yeah.
I am not – the old – why did it fall, blah, blah, blah. And the night that that producer saw Crushed, I had a 90s old school projector.
Yeah.
The bulb went out. And I had to figure out on the fly, which I love. Childhood trauma. I love dealing with stuff on the fly. And I talk about that too. But
yeah, yeah.
There is something so beautiful about just accepting, okay, so I've had enough, like, memory stones along the way to be like, it's going to be okay. And actually that might be better. It might be better if it fell apart. That's okay. It doesn't mean I don't still grapple with that sometimes. You know, I was supposed to have an interview with a really big show and it's being pushed a little bit. And I'm like, a TV show, and I'm like, you know, I'll immediately go into why, like, this always happens, and then nope, I don't know why, and I may never know why, but I'm gonna sit with the fact that there's a lot of other times in my life I'm gonna be okay.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah, no, that's that's kind of where I'm at now myself, yeah. Where it's like I have to let go of a lot of stuff and disappointment, yeah. And yeah, I've had expectations kind of dropped on me, and then, or just, opportunities again, just like, oh, I thought I had this, and I'm starting, well, at this stage, I'm like, okay, I'm still a work in progress myself. So, it's a constant evolution. But I'm kind of just like, oh, let it go. And again, like this universal, whatever energy saying, you're meant to be here, that fell through for a reason. I had a big opportunity that just fell through where I was supposed to be in Armenia for 2.5 years already. So I would have been in Armenia for 2.5 years teaching English, but that fell through and I can't control that. And then, so I'm like, oh, I'm meant to do this, talk, you know, have conversations. Develop the radio show more and develop my visual practice, I guess. So I'm like, I'll bet I did want to be in Armenia for 2.5 years, which would have been cool experience. The universe is like, no, this is it. Yeah. You got to do this.
Yeah. And by the way, when somebody's going through the heartbreak,
yeah, yeah,
the last thing we want to say to them is, that's what's supposed to be, or this is meant to be. Like, that's the worst.
Yes.
Just sit with the person.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That really stinks.
Yeah.
You know?
No, exactly. I'm like, you know? I hear you. I feel you. Instead of, like, judging and saying.
You can get to the, wow, this actually was a great thing that happened or the right thing or whatever, but not then.
Yeah.
Then just let it out. Eat your ice cream. I eat non-dairy. I'm jealous if you eat regular.
Cool.
But, like, but eat your ice cream, get under a cozy blanket, be with the people that you can surround yourself that will not tell you toxic positivity. They'll just be like, yeah, that stinks. That really stinks. That's terrible. There's a lot of other words I could use, but we're on the radio. So
of
I'm just
going
to say that
yes.
stinks over and over again. And just sit in the reality that, like, it's not always going to feel this way. But, like, right now it does. And that really stinks.
Yeah. It's such a hard practice, though. I mean, in the moment when
so
you're feeling
hard.
In the moment too, where you're just feeling so defeated and hurt, and it's hard to just, like,
yeah,
be zen about it, but I mean, that's the whole practice of said meditations, you know?
Okay, two thoughts. One, there's a Parks and Rec is like the be all and end all for
nice,
me.
Yeah.
And there's a great scene where she, I think it's when she got off the city council, when they booted her off. I think it's that. And she's sitting at lunch with Anne, and she's like, you know, this is terrible, whatever. And Anne's like, this stinks. It's the worst. And you can tell me that for another year. And Leslie goes, do you hear that? You said like another year. So I can, you know. And I just love that she has someone that says, like, it's okay if in a year you're still feeling like this.
Yeah.
And that's grief. I think that, you know, I remember people said to me, like, it's been like, what are you doing? Like, why are you still crying about this? Like, it's, and I'm like, because I haven't actually grieved it.
No, exactly.
It's just spinning around in me.
Those are the worst words. Yeah. Of like, why are you still thinking? Or yes. like I haven't processed it yet, or I haven't like grieved and let it go yet. And you know,
yes,
those are the worst words. Yeah.
And being a creative,
yes,
you are bombarded with other creatives who are doing what you want to be doing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, it can feel, especially as an actor, I went in for roles, got really close, and I didn't get them. I got really close to this role on Modern Family before it even aired,
cool.
I never could watch Modern Family because I was like, nope. There were a couple things I got really close to, and I was like, nope. I was on hold for that show Jury Duty that came out a little while ago, and that, to me, it made complete sense. I was like, they need people who are improv that have basically been lying low, that are not recognizable. This is perfect for me. I was on hold. It was incredible. One of my friends was the writer. Like, it was so good. And we're trying to figure out how we're going to make it work, because I'm going to have to be in LA, and we're now in Atlanta, and like, houses. And I got released. And that was absolutely devastating. Absolutely. I have not watched the show. And the best is when everyone messages you and goes, you know, you would have been great on this show.
Oh,
thanks, dude. Thanks so much. Yeah. Thank you. And I don't tell people, like, I learned very long. I don't share what's like when I'm on hold for anything, or I have auditions, or I'm in a meeting or whatever. I really, like, it took me so long to tell people I signed a book deal, because it was just like, I know that it could fall through at any moment.
It's like, I don't want to jinx this, or
I mean, like I can't believe I'm literally like
holding a physical copy for the listeners out there. Yeah.
I'm holding a physical copy. I'm looking at it like, these are my words. Like, how is this even, I cannot, the amount of almost, I mean, you've heard a few, but like the amount of almost I've had, and the amount of promises that have been made to me, the amount of promises I made to myself, and just to be sitting here and say, and here's the other thing as a creative, which I think is the pivots of like, I have to constantly be creating. I painted for a little while. I have to constantly be creating, but it took me a long time, and therapy helped me understand that is me, that I have to constantly be creating. And I don't know if you feel like that as well. Like,
I'm a person of multiple hats, but I have to I have to converse, of course. I have to document. I have to paint. I have a paint studio here in Hudson, New York. And I paint. I found painting, though, like, again, during lockdown in 2020, to really heal me. Like, I needed to get some type of expression out. And since I wasn't actually going out and documenting live performance due to external circumstances, I went into it. I had to get it out through painting. I've done a lot of art therapy in the past, and actually... Mm. I love dance therapy, movement, expression.
Love it.
I still haven't found myself on stage, which I should do. I would love to get past this, like, my own self of blocking my own way, getting in my own way. So I'd love to try improv, you know, and get out there and just do something uncomfortable, because it's like, I know I'm good at the visual stuff. Let me try to go out there and just open up on stage in front of strangers, you know?
You know what? Okay, so I think everybody in their lifetime should work a customer service job where you have to work a register.
Yeah.
Because that is a scary thing. And when it goes down and people are waiting, blah, blah. And you have to ask constantly, how are you doing? What's going on with you? It's not about, you know. taking care of the person. And number two, everybody should take an improv class.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you learn how to yes and. You learn, I just heard someone say this. I think it was Catherine Hahn on Amy Poehler's podcast. I can't remember, but it was basically like, you don't jump into the scene until you're needed. You're not there to be funny. You're just when you're needed. And there's something so beautiful about that, of like learning how to wait your turn and then yes anding. Whatever somebody says, you accept it and you build.
Yeah.
And you can't negate. There's just so many beautiful things that come out of improv. You never even have to get on a stage. But there's so many beautiful things that come. And my husband and I met in improv.
Yes, yeah.
So
oh, wow.
That holds, like, we met at Groundlings in L.A.
Cool.
And then I ghosted him for being too nice. and then we had to talk for 3 years. But I really do. And we improvise around the house constantly. I mean, all of our kids are, like, it's hilarious. When we were first dating, I remember his roommate said we would play fight, like joking around and kind of talk. And his roommate, I left one night and his roommate was like, hey, dude, are you guys good? You good? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's like us having fun. And I think that there's something so beautiful about playing. And as a creative, I think we feel like we have to be good at something right away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what is it, like 1,000 hours, 10,000 hours? What's the
again? I think that's like also. I'm not sure if that holds true, but they say yeah. The marketed term is 10,000 hours, but
yes. And I think to me, it's not so much. Oh my gosh, I did my 10,000.
Yes,
hour,
yeah.
10,000th hour.
Yes.
It's more about, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I just started this. I'm not going to be good at it. My daughter just started these little crochet things where it's like you get a little kit and you watch a video. Am I allowed to say what it is? I'm not trying to pitch it, so maybe I won't say what it is, but it's a really cute little crochet kit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And she started it. It's always on Instagram. And she started it, and she I said, before you start, I want you to write a piece of paper and you tape it on your wall. And it said, I've never done this. This is brand new to me. I'm gonna make mistakes. It's not gonna look like what I hope it will look
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And the reason I knew to do that is we've had other instances where she believes she needs to be the best already or mastered it.
Hmm.
And I'm going to be honest, her dad and I are the same way. We're the same way.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
We're creatives, but we're perfectionists because we've lived in America because of – there's so
exactly.
many reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the more we can play, the more free we are. And, you know, I've been writing for so long. And I did not think this book was going to happen. It wasn't even in my, until I read that CDC report. That's not where I was.
Yeah.
So yeah. I feel so grateful to have the freedom to play. And that can mean different things on different days, different weeks.
Well, that's comes down to it where it's like, the things that are most successful are the ones that we didn't plan for. Or just mm-hmm. didn't think about, you know, or, you know, mm-hmm. so it's like, if you're like, go out and try to plan to be successful, most of the time you're not, you know, I mean, some people do, good for them. But, you know, sometimes I'm like, if you just let it go, things will come to you instead of trying to force creative yeah. ideas. But it seems like, you know, your journey has culminated to the book and that's why it's being receptive, you know, in communities and in public. So I guess as we come down to the hour, where do you see already? It's been a fast hour. I guess, where do you see the project going? Would you say if you were offered, could you turn it into a film or live action?
So it's so funny that you say that because this was a pilot.
Yes.
So Crushed was a one-woman show. Then it was a pilot.
Yeah,
then it was a podcast. It's actually been turned into – it was a full – like I wrote a full Christmas holiday movie that was like multi-generational for a network that then ghosted me.
Yeah.
So it has been so many things.
Yeah.
I am so – doing my best. It's so funny. So many people are like, I feel like so many people are so relieved that finally something is like quote unquote working out for me long term. And I think it's hilarious. And so, you know, my brother who is featured in the book a lot, he's like, Kirsten, I'm so happy for you. And I'm like, you know what? My job is done. Whoever is supposed to read this book is going to read it.
Yeah.
Right. But I did find my agent is part of an agency that does movie deals. So that was very wink, wink. That was part of this.
I get you.
Does that mean it's going to happen? I don't know. And I'm doing my best to just be as open as I possibly can.
Yeah.
I could see you doing.
Sorry to cut you off again. I'm also a Dia guy. I could see you doing like also like workshops or stand, you know, or like
yes,
kind
that,
of
I
like
think that. I would love to be able to parlay this into speaking and doing workshops for women.
Yeah.
And I have been so fortunate to be able to hear from so many girls and women, and actually. We used to live in Brooklyn, and I'm on a mom's group in Brooklyn that's pretty large.
Cool.
And I was like, hey, I want to find to read advanced readers that are moms of girls that are teenagers or in their early 20s, because I really think this is a multi-generational thing. I think that moms can go back to what they see. Look, it's falling apart. I think moms can go back to what they were feeling, and they might forget that it's actually been sitting in there the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think they can connect with their daughters, but I think their daughters can connect with their moms in a way that I think could be really, really beautiful. Kind of like Gilmore Girls a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. I'm hopeful, and I'm just trying to be as open as I possibly walk through the doors that are open.
Of course.
That's all I'm trying to
do. Yeah. Yeah. And kind of have a final thought for, young woman out there or ladies out there that are in the creative realm, and any key piece of advice or any creatives, as a matter of fact, any one tidbit from your whole experiences being crushed.
I actually want to read the dedication, because that's what I want to leave people with.
Cool.
It says, for the girl who sees herself in these pages, who wishes so deeply that someone would see her. You were all I saw as I wrote it all down. I wrote crushed for you. I think I want women that are creative and don't believe themselves to be creative, but you all are. I want them to know that their value is not defined by the currency of beauty, that they're already beautiful, and that I hope they somehow find the book. They can go to my website, kirstenlyons.com, and you can find different ways to get it. But I hope that they know that their value and worth isn't dependent on what someone says about them or what job they have. It is so much more than what they're doing with their life. And I hope they know that they were valuable from the moment they came into this world.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Wow. Thank you for Kirsten for chatting with me on my my new experiment of being live on air.
I like new. My agent was new. My editor was new. Let's do it.
Yeah. And if you can hang on for like a sec after I go off air, just to do the admin stuff, and that'd be cool. I still have 2 minutes. I'm still.
Okay, I want to know a question.
Of course.
For you.
Yes.
Okay, so you picked up a lens at 17.
2017.
Yes, is what I meant to say. 2017. Where are you at now with photography? Is it still something that brings you joy?
Yes, I'm reinvigorated. I think I took a hiatus last year. But, you know, in 2023, I had a huge show of 75 images in Beacon, New York. So that was a bit of a mini retrospective for me of a culmination of, you know, 5-6 years of documenting culture in New York City and up and down the Northeast. And now I'm really evolving and taking it seriously again, or a bit like finding my passion for it. I've been doing a lot of studio stuff too. It's still life stuff. It's the energy for camera work is coming back to me again. But I definitely have tons of writing. I have a typewriter, which I've typed since 2020, just a big manuscript of kind of basically stream of conscious stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to just build a community too. Like I would love to host creatives, local creatives for dinners and stuff like that. And I'm constantly evolving and in trying to have deeper discussions with other fellow creatives. And yeah,
I think also, like, I'm proud of you, if I can say that.
Oh,
that
you thank took a break, you so much. Yeah,
that you took a break. I think that that is the biggest thing we can do as a creative, is take a break.
Of course.
Walk and away.
On that note, we're coming in 30 seconds. I have to be mindful for time on air. Yeah. And just a note to the listeners, that intro was created by my friend in L.A., actually, Walter ETC. He created that little jingle for the series on Contaminated Sound. So I hope you enjoyed this.